On the line now, I have Roger Cole from Pana. Good morning to you, Roger.
Good morning, how are you?
Okay, can you explain the situation now with arms and Europe and all of that and the way it works? Because I was just, I'll let you answer that and then I'll ask you the main question I want to ask you.
Well, essentially, when the Lisbon Treaty was passed, it said that part of that treaty meant that any military structures that would then in subsequently be set up would be permanent. I think that the name is PESCO, the permanent military forces, so that any country in the European Union that participated in any steady build-up of any military formations would be forever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a huge difference between what had happened before for a long, long time, which was the EU battle groups, where they weren't permanent. They only operated for a six-month period at any one time. So that went on for a long time, but they weren't there forever. So there's a fundamental shift as a consequence of the Lisbon Treaty meant they were going to be there for forever. And that meant that once the Irish Army committed itself to participating in parts. To understand PESCO, it's quite complicated because a number of individual states get involved in a particular project. You understand?
Yes, yeah.
And these little particular projects, it's like little building blocks. So you agree to be part of a little block of various of particular activities, and you might do two or three of them, right?
Yeah.
And each country would pick their own one. But if you pick them all together, they eventually come together, and that starts the process of building an actual army. Now, that will take a long time, because as you know, the Lisbon Treaty was passed a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But the decision of the United Kingdom to leave the European Union, because the United Kingdom had got to the stage it wasn't enthusiastic about the steady formation of a European Union. It's not happening immediately, it never was, but there is a steady process towards building a European army. And that's the core.
Okay.
You're
right, it's complicated. No, I was just thinking back,
permanent, it's just not used to be permanent, now it is.
Yeah. I mean, if you go back to the Second World War, for instance, I imagine most countries in Europe, we just looked on each other as allies, and even with America, looked upon as allies from any threat from outside of that sort of area. I don't know where sometimes maybe they thought the threat was coming from at that particular time, but is that the way it worked at that time, would you know?
Well, in the time of the Second World War.
Yeah, just before that. I mean, an understanding
World War,
of alliance?
Each state was a sovereign state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Ireland, the 26th county state was a sovereign state, and so was all the other states. They were all sovereign states, and they all made up their own mind independently of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no... This is a situation now where every single country in the European Union, other than Denmark, now takes part in all this process of creating the building blocks for an actual European army,
mm-hmm.
committed to the European Union, just the way that when we were in the British Union, we were part automatically of a single state with a single army.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, there was quite a lot of people. I mean, during the most people, probably mainly because they were poor, there's only way of making money. I mean, even James Connolly joined the British Army for a short while,
mm-hmm.
which just gives you an indication of why people joined. Was primarily, I'm not talking about the officer class, but the actual soldiers did so because they were poor. So there is a lot. There is a bit of a tradition that, you know what I mean, like the British Army, the actual officers were all strongly loyal to the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Which you might remember from your history books.
Yeah,
the officers of the British Army had a mutiny and refused to take action against the illegal UVF that had been set up.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this is new. This is completely new now. This is actual military formations being created bit by bit, which are there forever, and they're all in the process of steadily building a European army. And now what's happening is they're allocating large amounts of money to actually create the army. In other words, there's a sizable military industrial complex in Europe, you know, big firms that make weapons,
mm-hmm.
and they want their, it's a way of them making extra profits.
That's what I was just wondering about, because the amounts of money that's stated there is mind-boggling to an extent. So is this what the opposition is about? Is about the cost of it, or is it about the idea of it, the conception of it?
Well, both. I mean, we would argue that Ireland fought a national war of independence against being part of a British Union with its army.
Mm-hmm.
So we would maintain that Ireland, therefore, wanted to have its own independent state. And that's what happened 100 years ago with the National War of Independence. And that when the then Irish representatives, I mean, it was a day or so ago, there was a truce declared. And then rising from that, there was a period of negotiations directly with the British Empire, with the British Union.
Mm-hmm.
And in the position papers that the then Irish government brought to the British Union, the British Empire, they said, we wish Irish neutrality to be neutral. And if, however, our country was invaded and used as a base against an attack on you, we will fight that attack, right?
Okay.
No, they wouldn't allow, they were agreeing that in return for Irish neutrality, we would accept that we wouldn't allow anybody to use our territory to attack England, which I personally think is perfectly reasonable.
You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Indeed.
But that meant that we didn't get involved in, you know, you weren't anymore part of the army of the British Union. Now, 100 years later, the current government are a kind of bit like, you know, the Home Rule Party in those days wanted to, accepted
yes, yeah.
to be part of the army of the British Union. We might have a little bit of home rule, but we were a part of the British Union. Now the current government, the Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Green Party government, are now accepting that we should be part of a European army. Now, there's no European army in existence, you know what I mean?
But yes, indeed,
the
yeah.
building blocks are being created.
But are we not, in a sense, unspoken an army, the Union, the whole concept of the Union of Europe? In its own way. I mean, that's from separating out the costs. Is that what the big opposition is? Or is it the concept itself? Or both, as
oh,
you
both
said?
Of them. Both
Absolutely,
of them.
Okay.
Both of them.
But are we not part of that anyway? We'll just talk about one part of it. We're part of it now. So if I don't know, if the same thing had happened, if Germany, for instance, or somewhere invaded or anywhere Russia invaded France and went through all this conquering again, we couldn't remain neutral now, could we?
Well, of course we could.
No, but we're part of the Union.
Yeah, but there's nothing in the Union, there's nothing in any treaty that says we have a legal obligation to defend another
okay.
country that's in the European Union. There's no legal requirement. Now, you see, there are a lot of people who see themselves no longer as Irish. They don't see themselves as Irish any longer. They see themselves as European. Their loyalty is not to Ireland. Their loyalty is to the European Union. And therefore, those kind of people, you know, the kind of people in Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, not all of them,
I know, yeah.
You know what I mean? Not all of them.
I was just going to say, a lot of people would dispute that.
There used to be a strong Republican tradition in both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. You know what I mean? And like in 1939, every single solitary member of the Dáil Éireann voted to be in favour of Irish neutrality in the Second World War, bar one person elected.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the commitment to Irish neutrality is not, if you like, a left or right or centre thing. It's a deeply rooted tradition, first initiated by Wolfe Tone in 1790. You know what I mean?
Yes,
being
yeah.
an independent state, wanting to be an independent state,
so
wanting
apart,
to be an independent state, representing our country on the United Nations Security Council from time to time. Is a reflection of that.
So if this came to fruition, then this proposal, that would take away that neutrality?
Well, yes, because we wouldn't have a separate army. You know, the army would be part of a European army.
Yeah.
It'd be a regiment. You know the way you had the Connaught Rangers, right?
Yeah.
Or the Dublin Fusiliers, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were military formations that gave their ultimate loyalty not to Ireland, not to England, not to Scotland, but to the British Union as a whole, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the British Empire as a whole, right? And that's the process that's beginning to happen in this country. And we're saying, no, we want the European Union. We're in favor of staying in the European Union. But we don't want to die for the European Union. Because I know initially these things are all the same. They start off with a war and it's only the soldiers that take part, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as a war gets bigger and bigger and bigger, right?
Then the public...
If it hadn't been for the Republican tradition that goes back to Wolfe Tone and so on and so forth, that more Irish people would have got involved. And obviously then after the O'Donovan Rossum funeral and the fact that people were coming back in body bags, and then of course the 1960 rising, the whole fundamental change, and saying we're not going to fight for the British Union, going to be an independent state, and that became the norm, and that's why PAN exists. Like, we're not some sort of radical organization. We're really pointing out that this is a long, deeply rooted historical tradition that we are in, that we want to be an independent state, and we want to have our own army that defends the interests of Ireland. And we don't really...
As we are at the moment. You want things to remain as they are.
Well, as they have been for... Yes, yeah. Well, not everybody...
Well, can I just ask you one question in relation to that, just to clarify a few things about the whole idea of this. For instance, each country at the moment, even though we're part of the European Union, has its own agenda, has its own costs as regards its defence... that they dictate themselves. Each government dictates their own costs themselves. Isn't that the way it is at the moment?
Oh, yes, that's the way
okay.
it is at the moment.
So
because
if we get...
If, countries,
yeah,
right?
So if the army comes in, just to finish the point, if this main army came in and was made of a European army, that would change. Because people, would they be told, you have to do this and we have to do that? So, because I'm looking at some of the costs that would come into each country, and it seems to be extraordinary when you think about housing and all that sort of carry on in different countries. A lot of countries have the same types of problems, and this waste of money on armaments. But that would change, wouldn't the whole concept of that change and the idea of a change?
Oh yes, absolutely. I mean, if you this is known. You know what I mean? It's not as if. It's not, you can find out about it relatively easily. You go on to the various websites, you can go on to the European Union itself. I mean, the latest thing they've done is they've allocated literally billions of euro to provide weapons to states in other states. In other words, like places like Mali, places like that, where they would actually sell weapons. With our money, your money, my money, is going to be used to buy weapons, usually probably manufactured by military industrial complexes in Europe or somewhere else. I give those weapons to countries that are not in the European Union.
Okay.
Like we also, for example, we have troops in Mali. You know that.
I do, yeah, but then...
And what's happening there is we are now coming up to a 20-year war that's finally coming to an end in Afghanistan after 20 years, in which Irish troops also served at the Afghan war. They were there taking part in the war too.
But peacekeeping?
Oh, no,
to an extent.
A war, you're taking part in a war. You know what I mean?
Yes, okay.
I mean, this is gobbledygook. You know, there was a war going on between armies of occupation and the people who wanted those army of occupations of Afghanistan to leave, just like we did, right?
Okay.
And you can call it what you like. You can say it's peacekeeping. You can say it's peacemaking. You can say it's peace this, peace that. Because people like using the word peace. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a nice word. So they don't say, years ago, like before the First World War, the government minister in charge of war was actually called the Minister for War, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now they're called the Ministers of Defense. But it's the same actual job,
mm-hmm.
the Minister for War.
Okay.
And
It depends what way you look at it.
So that's the core, one of the core ideological.
So who, if it came, as I said, to fruition, this alliance, war, will there be a council? Is there any structure to it? And who makes the rules? There is a military structure. And who makes the rules?
Well, the way it is...
Would it be a person from each country?
Yes, there's a representative from each country. And at the moment, it would be have to be unanimous. In other words, the IRED, they can't send troops abroad from a European Union unless it's a unanimous agreement by each individual state. For example, in this PESCO business, by which these structures are being taking place, they've also approached other countries that aren't in the European Union, like Israel, to say, will you become a kind of a partner in our PESCO this PESCO military operations? I don't want to give the impression I think there's a European army like tomorrow or something like that. You know what I mean? That's not going to happen. It's just a steady, slow process, but it's always going one way. And like, for example, when the Irish people voted against the Lisbon Treaty, they were essentially told, you got that wrong, change your mind and vote in favour. And the amount of money that was spent by the campaigners in favour of a second vote was way, 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 way bigger than those who... those who were not in favour have been voting again on the treaty they've already rejected. And all we seek, by the way, just in case there's any sense of, what you want, Denmark is not a member and doesn't. They voted against the Maastricht Treaty and then they renegotiated the terms with the European Union, and one of those things is the legal term that Denmark doesn't take part in the process of the militarisation of the European Union. So Denmark plays no role in PESCO whatsoever. And all we're saying, if it's good enough for the Danes, and nobody's talking about expelling Denmark from the European Union, then it should be okay for us. If Denmark can do it, and Denmark is a successful, size country, not that more or less the same size as us, that does not want to become involved in the European army, and they got a protocol that excluded from that, and that's all we've ever looked for.
Well, can I ask you about the Peace and Neutrality Alliance itself? It was founded in 1996. Is it growing, and how is it funded, and that sort of thing?
Well, it's funded largely by groups that affiliate to us. You know what I mean? You have a number of trade unions affiliated to us, a number of political parties affiliated to us, a number of NGOs affiliated to us. You know what I mean? So, and the figures aren't enormous. I mean, we would have played, for example, just give you an example, we would have played a major role in opposing the war on Iraq. And you might remember there was a big demonstration before the war, right? And well over 100,000 people turned up. So we would have played a key role in that. But the war in Iraq went ahead, the war in Afghanistan went ahead, and a quarter of a million men, women and children have been killed in the Afghan war, and well over a million people have been killed in the Iraq war. And there's only now, 20 years later, the Americans and their allies, including Ireland, have pulled out of Afghanistan, having been defeated, and leaving a quarter of a million people dead behind them.
Okay. Listen, we're running out of time, Roger, so I'll ask you, you have a website, of course, I'm sure, the Peace and Neutrality Alliance. Okay. And can people join?
Yes, I mean, it's open to individuals. Now, it is primarily something that brings together groups, but there are individuals can join as well.
Okay. And what future plans have you got for this? You said it's well down the line.
We have very, very good contacts with other groups of a similar mind all over Europe, in particular as well as the United States of America. And we are hoping to organize, in America, the main peace group that is Veterans for Peace. In other words, people who were part of the American Army who changed their mind as a consequence of taking part in these wars, and they're now known, they're known as the Veterans for Peace. And we are going to be organizing a tour of Ireland by these American veterans, a tour of Ireland next year. That's our major event.
Okay, maybe I'll talk to you.
A lot of Americans who don't want all these wars either. You know?
I was going to say I'm bloody sure, but I am bloody sure there is. And as I say, a lot of things, it's nice maybe to see something done ahead of time rather than in hindsight.
And we're politically pleased and invited because we are not anti-American. You know what I mean? This idea of, you know, we're anti is always twaddle. There's no end of Americans. That's the one reason why Trump won the election last time around. He was saying we should end all these wars. I mean, if Trump had still been president, the American troops would have left in May.
When I hear words like, you know, about Trump being president, my mind goes blank because I'm terrified that he's going to get in again.
People in America don't want, huge numbers of people don't want all these endless wars.
Well, nobody does. I don't think anybody does.
Well, they do, because they keep on going. They keep on going to war.
It's the world we live in, unfortunately. But anyway, listen, Roger, it's been a great pleasure talking to you, and I'll have a look up the website, because have a look up some more on it, and I'm sure a lot of people will as well. And we'll watch how things develop, and maybe talk to you next year for that get-together of all the Americans coming over. Thank you very much, Roger. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's a chairperson, Roger Cole from PANA. Yeah, very interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's the thing we didn't think of, a European army.